if everybody doesn't already know that when we are feeling like we're in a mental health crisis, when we're feeling suicidal, we can call the phone number 988. And 988 is the suicide hotline. It's the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. So you just dial on your phone 988, just like you would like 911, just that simple. And there's going to be somebody that you can talk to. And they don't track your location. They don't track your name. Like they don't, they only have what you give them. So if you don't tell them where you are, who you are or whatever, they won't know it. So there's no reporting of the information. So like, you don't have to be afraid. You don't have to worry that it's going to come back or it's going to end up in your records or whatever, like nothing like that. It's just, so if you do need to talk to someone, then they're there for you. And then
hey, Mom Nation, welcome to Mental Wealth with Laura Wood and Katie Holly Lambert, where we talk through generational trauma so we can leave a new legacy for our children. Counselor Laura is with Benevieri Counseling out of Chandler, Arizona, and you can find her on Facebook, on the web, or by the link in the show notes. We hope you enjoy the show.
Hey, Mom Nation, and welcome to the very first episode of Mental Wealth for 2023. Laura, this is our 13th show.
Our 13th show. That's so cool. This has been such an awesome thing. I'm so glad we're doing another year.
Me too.
I think this is like one of my favorite things that I get to do.
Oh, awesome. And we get to do it together. So that's so fun.
I know. I love it.
I get a ton of feedback, actually. I know that you get some feedback too, but I get a bunch of feedback. So I know that we're helping mamas out there and, you know, they may not reveal themselves and they may not comment necessarily, but I know that they're watching. So for all of you out there that are watching, that this really, really helps out, this is why we do it. Like, this is for you guys. So thank you for tuning in and please stick with us. Before we hop into our topic for today, you know how it works here, right, guys? So this is Mental Wealth, where we work on ourselves so that we don't pass this baggage down to our kiddos. Like, they don't need it. It's not theirs. I don't know about you, but I've gotten some baggage throughout my lifetime. Well, in the early days, that wasn't mine. And it took me a while to get through that. And it wasn't even mine. Really, it's unfair.
Yeah. We got to keep it from keeping going.
Exactly. And then, you know, when we do that, then we give our kids kind of like more of a leg up, right? Because they don't have all of this junk to kind of deal with and get through and all these triggers that are triggering them all over the place to do things and act in ways that they, that isn't a win for them.
Yeah, I agree.
And so
giving them a leg up, we got to do it.
Heck yeah. And so here we are. So it's really, really important, as Laura and I will always tell you, to take care of your mental health, but it's also really important, Laura, to take care of your physical health. And I just wanted to shout out real quick, you know this girl, Dr. Bobby Bennett with Bodywise Chiropractic, one of my very favorite people on the planet. Love seeing her. She is in Tempe. Again, her practice is Bodywise Chiropractic. I have been seeing her for a couple of years now. And you know what is super cool about Bobby is she specializes in working with pregnant mamas.
I love that. I didn't know that. My son sees Bobby as well. So he has been enjoying her work for a little while now too.
She's pretty amazing. I love going in there. And then when I come out, I feel like a million bucks. But yeah, so the last time I was in there, she had a pregnant mama sitting on the couch next to me. And another mama that had just had her baby came in with her newborn, and Bobby will adjust a newborn as well. Isn't that crazy cool?
I love that. That's so cool.
Yeah. So, and she'll tell you all about why they need that. It actually, I believe, Bobby, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it helps. One of the things that it helps with is like releasing gas. You know how when they're newborns, you kind of got to like run their legs so that they can release that gas that gets built up there, because it really hurts their little bellies.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I love that. I think that's super cool.
Huge secret. It does the same thing for adults too. And it's a bit embarrassing, but Bobby's good people. So, you know, things happen.
She understands. There's no judgment. It's a judgment-free zone.
Exactly. And she knows when she adjusts me that it's going to, you know, rustle some stuff up in there. So I think she knows it's coming, but sorry, Bobby, But I appreciate your, shall I say, release. Appreciate that.
So funny.
Bobby over at Bodywise Chiropractic, mamas, go check her out if you are in need. Let's jump right into it. This is a post. As you guys know, we like to talk about posts that are posted throughout the month with our mamas, with, you know, with respect to mental health. And usually they are group member posts, so anonymous posts, right? We don't want to call anybody out here. So I like to pick the anonymous posts so that nobody's name is shared and that kind of thing. So I am going to pull it up right now. And this is the post we're going to talk through today, guys. So for those of you who are just listening to the audio version of the podcast, I will read it. Again, anonymous post. And this came, actually, I thought it was last month, but it wasn't. It was about a week ago. So pretty recent. This poor mama. Ever feel like you're getting closer and closer to giving up? That no matter how much you fight your demons, they're going to win soon. Yeah, I'm at that point. It's so hard to talk to my husband about it because I feel like he just doesn't understand what depression is. Been there. How, even though I have a job and most days it's a struggle to get up, I do go days without a shower because I just don't have the energy to take one. I feel like I'm drowning in my own head.
Oh, deep breaths.
Right? Tough. I mean, I'm sure she's feeling all sorts of isolation.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing that stood out to me is that I can't talk to my husband about it. You know, that feeling of being so alone and not understood. We need to be understood. We need to be connected. Connection and relational safety are really the cures to these types of feelings. The antidote to distress is relational safety and connection. And so when we feel that we can't talk to somebody that we care about, or when we feel alone, that's what really, really makes things a lot worse.
That makes a lot of sense. And it doesn't feel safe, right?
That's right. Yeah.
It doesn't feel safe. And so if you were talking to this mom, and I know, like with every time we do this, there's so many questions I want to ask, you know, there's missing information, right? But do you have some suggestions? If you were talking to this mom, is there a way or words that we can use to describe what depression is when talking with somebody that maybe can't relate or hasn't had that type of feeling in their lifetime? Like, what kinds of words can we use? Is there examples? Like, what do you think? What would you tell her to maybe try and open up the lines of communication?
Well, I mean, one thing is that we don't have to describe it exactly right to just be heard. And I think when we're asking for help, it's important that we, especially with a husband or a spouse, like we can actually clarify, like, hey, I just need you to hear me right now. Mm-hmm. I need to know that you are with me and that you see me. And, you know, even if you don't understand, because you've never felt that way, I just really want to know that you are connected to me and that you are here for me as my partner in this, that when I'm struggling. So it's not as much about what we're telling our person. It's about what we need from our person, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, however we're experiencing it, we're describing something for ourselves, right? So I hear depression a lot in the form of a hole, like you're inside a hole and you're kind of looking up at the world and sort of things are happening and you're reaching and you just can't get out. You just can't. And, you know, you keep falling back down and you keep reaching and no one's there to pull you out. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it's that need to get out of this space that is seemingly so consuming and that we can't escape from. And I think that's one way, right, to describe depression. But I think there's so many people's individual experiences that we need to consider as their truth, right? And their reality, like we don't live in an objective reality.
Right.
We live in a subjective reality. And so what that means is that what's happening for me right now might not be the same as what's happening for you. And that's sometimes why we miss each other in connection, because we're like, well, what do you mean? We're having like such a good time right now. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, yes, but on the inside, I'm feeling really scared. On the inside, I'm feeling really small. On the inside, I'm feeling really worried, right? Like, yeah, we're having a good time, but I'm experiencing more on the inside right now than I'm letting on, mm-hmm. you know? And so it's hard for other people to see that, right? Because they might think, oh, but you're so, right? Like, how many times have somebody told you, Katie, like, oh, but you're so social and outgoing. Like, you always have so much energy. Like, you can't be depressed. Like, you have all this stuff, right? Like, you're doing so good. Mm-hmm. But it's like, okay. Like,
but that's not every moment
aspect of my life. Right. Right.
Right.
Exactly. So we're dynamic. We contain multitudes, as it were. We are not one thing. And so as we're experiencing these painful moments, it's not how we express them. It's that we are reaching for help. We're reaching for connection. We want to feel seen and felt. And so if we can clarify that to our partners and our friends and our people and say, like, I really need you to give me a hug and tell me that you've got my back, mm-hmm. and that I'm having a hard time and that you can understand how I'm having a hard time. Like, man, I see that you're having a hard time. I hear you. And I know that must be really difficult for you to keep just powering through. And I don't understand what's going on the inside, but I can see you and I hear you telling me that you're struggling and I believe you. And I'm sorry that that's happening for you. And I've got you. I'm right here. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't have to fix anything. I don't have to challenge your thinking. I don't have to make you look on the bright side. I don't have to do that. The reason why people seem to not understand sometimes is because they're trying to fix it.
Right. And husbands tend to be like that, right? It's a guy thing.
Partners, right?
Yeah.
Who doesn't want to fix somebody else's problem? I do that. Well, I went to school. I majored in that.
Right. Right.
We want to fix it. We want to help.
And so getting to that point, though, I feel like we need to back up just a little bit, because mm-hmm. that conversation takes courage, first of all.
So much, yeah.
Right? And then what if we don't really know? Like, how do you figure out what's going on with you? What if you're just sad and have all these things going on? You don't really know how to put it in its appropriate bucket in order to say, hey, you know, I talked to my therapist about this yesterday. You know, I locked myself in my room so that I could be alone because I feel most comfortable being alone. But you know what? I really wish that you would knock at the door.
Yeah.
But yeah. How do you get to that point if you don't really understand? Like, until I had that conversation with my therapist, okay, everybody, Laura and I are really good friends. She can't be my therapist. It's too close for comfort. So I have my own. But until I had that conversation with her, I didn't realize, hey, I really just need him to knock at the door when I lock myself in my room because I need to be alone.
Yeah.
How do you get there?
I think that's really hard, and it's going to be different for everyone. So there's two major sort of points of relationship in our inner experience, is that we have a need to connect, and then we have a sort of defense against the need for connection.
Yeah.
So we call that attachment cry and defense against attachment cry, right? So the reason why we are this way is because the single most important factor in human survival is another human, is the attachment with another human, right? Because a human baby, they can't make it on the streets, guys.
Right.
They need someone to take care of them, right? So other humans are the single most important factor in human survival. Now, the biggest threat to human survival is other humans.
Interesting.
Okay, so like, let's just sink that in right now. We have to have others to survive. But the most dangerous thing in our life is an other. And so we have a conflict sometimes in that. Mm-hmm. And so that conflict really begins in early childhood when our caretakers aren't consistently safe. They're not predictably safe. And so when we don't get that need met, when we go to another for connection, we seek help and that and we're rejected, right? That feeling is really scary and dangerous and upsetting for a baby child and a human child, because we don't want to lose that caretaker, right? We need them.
Right.
And so those feelings, the childhood attachment feelings of needing somebody else, and then also fearing the loss of them, and so defending against the need, trying to be alone, trying to say, oh, I'm independent, I don't need them, mm-hmm. right? Because if I don't need them, then I can't get hurt by them, right?
Right.
So it's sort of this confusing little cycle that we psych ourselves out. Sometimes our adult attachment system, which is also geared towards connection because we need to procreate and make more mm-hmm. people, right? So that gets confused and thinks that we need attachment the same way we did when we were a kid. So it kind of gets that life death, which is why we get so scared.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So it's just confusing our attachment needs from an adult perspective. And it's believing that we need the same things that we needed as a child, which feels like life and death. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's why it's so hard.
That's a deep one. That's a struggle. And I, as I'm processing what you are saying, I'm like, I get that struggle. Like,
totally.
You know, like that'll probably come up again in my future. And I'll be like, oh, this is what we talked about.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we notice that, right? So that's kind of the start. The starting point is to know, like, oh, I feel like, so I say to myself one time, a friend of mine said this to me, because she's also a therapist and we kind of do this to each other. I'm not going to die if I don't get this connection right now. So one time I had a fight with my boyfriend or whatever, right? And I was calling her and I said, oh, you know, I shouldn't have said what I said. I'm such a jerk. Like, I'm the worst. And she was like, stop it. Cause she heard that language in me. Like, I'm the worst. I'm bad. Right. Like, so that indicates that, like, I'm not seeing things from a reality, right? Cause I'm not just one thing.
Right.
I'm not bad. Maybe I made a mistake and I need to apologize, but I'm not bad. I'm not the worst. Right. So
right.
She heard that language and she said, hey, did you know you're not going to die if you don't resolve this conflict today? And I was like, oh, I didn't know that. But now that you tell me, I realize that I thought that. And now I realize that I'm okay. Mm-hmm. Right. So because our system was trapped in that belief, that need for attachment, because that gives me life, it thought that that was true, but that's not true anymore. So I had to get that reminder. So the first thing we do is we remind ourselves, like, oh, I'm not going to die. I'm actually just experiencing a state where I'm sad and I want somebody to be there with me. But if they're not here with me, I'm not going to die. I'm going to be able to get through this on my own.
And that instantly gives me relief.
Right.
So I feel instantly relieved even just talking about it. And so I have an easier time accessing what I need to access. And that's I right. have an easier time putting the lizard brain on the shelf.
Yes, okay. That exactly right. Yeah. So because from the perspective of someone who's not about to die is very different than the perspective of somebody who thinks they're about to die. Right.
Right.
And that's just an internal, that's a nervous system thing. We want our nervous system to be ready for action in the event of an emergency. right?
Right.
So we are wired to seek out the threat, right? So that's called a negativity bias, because our stuff is constantly looking for anything that could present a danger so that we can keep ourselves safe.
Okay.
So that's why we're kind of quick to get to that, like, oh, I'm going to die, kind of fight or flight. And so that's helpful. We want that. That's really important. So we were born with that. We came with it. So our brain is wired to keep us safe and to seek a threat and to adapt. And so we have that going in. What we don't have is the understanding of what our environment is, what in our environment is safe or dangerous. So that's what's learned.
Gotcha.
So we learn an internal sense of safety. We're born with an internal capacity to flee or fight in danger. So that's where mental wellness comes in. Mental wellness is a learned experience, because everybody's safety and danger are different depending on where you live, depending on your culture, depending on your family, right? Mm-hmm. So I can't be born with that. I have to learn that. So once I can discern between safety and danger, that gives me the ability to regulate myself. And then when I become an adult, I can know that I can keep myself safe. I don't need another person to keep myself safe. So that's really the difference between a child and an adult in this perspective, right? In this sort of process, an adult can keep themselves safe. A child cannot. So when I feel like I'm going to die without another, that tells me that I'm not in my grown-up brain. So my grown-up brain needs to come online. And how do I engage my grown-up brain is by saying, oh, I'm not going to die. I can actually keep myself safe because I'm an adult. I can do that. I can ask for help if I need it. So instead of waiting on the help.
You've said this before. You have to almost remind yourself, hey, I'm, 40, whatever years old.
Yeah, you do. And that's really helpful. And that gets back online, the stuff that you need to keep doing what you're doing. Because when you're in your most present version of your brain, you're operating with the most present version of data.
Mm-hmm.
So and I'm not reading. It's basically like when I'm getting caught up and I'm in that fight or flight, I'm reading a newspaper that was from a different day.
Yeah.
So I just need to realize what's happening now so that I can use this information to say, oh, am I in danger? No. Oh, okay, cool. So we want to just practice that present state of analysis where I'm saying, like, is this safe? Yes. Okay. Even though I don't feel safe, that's not a fact, right? So I'm going to get the facts into my system. I'm going to say, oh, but I'm actually safe. And so then as the more I learn how to tell if I'm safe, like what are some things that are telling me that I'm safe? Oh, well, my door is locked because I lock my door when I'm home alone.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I have water so I can take a drink if I need to, whatever. Right. So like I can remind myself that I'm safe. And so we can kind of pause there to give ourselves, that's a basic understanding of how our nervous system is sort of operating in the day to day and why we get so triggered to feel so helpless.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like we can practice that, right? So you get better and better and better, and right. Maybe you don't go into lizard brain for some things, right? Because you're right. Getting better and better and better and better. Or at least if you're headed there, you're like headed there. Let's get adult brain back online. And maybe you have like a couple of, I mean, is that a thing? Do you have like a little stuffed animal or something you rub to do? You know what I'm saying? Like, is that a thing?
Yeah. We call those anchors.
Okay.
Right. Cause that's going to anchor me right now. Like, oh, I didn't have this. This wasn't around when I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to be here now. Right. So like little things like that. The capacity for not going into fight or flight, not going into the lizard brain, That capacity has grown and developed over time. And so for those of us who experienced high levels of chronic stress during childhood, have a lower capacity for avoiding lizard brain, right? We go there faster. Yep. We lizard brain faster because
we sure
that's
do.
What we learned. We learned that our world is mostly unsafe.
Mm-hmm.
So we have less capacity for discernment between safety and danger in the present. Because we learned during childhood that the world is not a safe place. So we are we need to survive more than we need to just be present. And so the less stress we experience during childhood, the higher capacity we have to evaluate present safety, because we're less likely to go into automatic lizard brain. We're more right. likely to stop and evaluate. We're more likely to stop and analyze the data, like, oh, okay. Right. And so, mm-hmm. so that's a process that we learn during childhood. And if our childhood was particularly stressful, then we didn't have as much opportunity to learn about safety. So now as an adult, we can teach ourselves about safety because our brain never stops changing. So it's just wherever you are now is where we start. And then you build on that. So anchors are really helpful. Pictures or memories or, you know, resources and helpful stuff that remind us that we're okay now and that we're safe and that we've learned more tools than we had back then.
Mm-hmm. Is it, and then I think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Is it possible that, so parent had, you know, super stressful childhood, they're hitting the lizard brain relatively quickly, depending on what's going on in their lives now. Is it possible for kids to pick up on that? Even though they maybe aren't experiencing stress, but their parent is constantly in lizard brain. And
yeah.
then they can kind of, they like start mimicking that almost.
Well, yeah. And it's a combination of mimicking, and it's also that it is stressful, right? So if a parent, yeah. if a parent is believing that they're in a life or death situation, then the parent has less of a capacity to care for the child. So let's back that up. If a parent is not regulated, then they are not safe, right? So if I'm not safe, I cannot keep another person safe. So the more often I am dysregulated as a parent, the more often my child is in an unsafe situation from their nervous system's perspective, because one of the most important aspects of human survival in childhood is the ability to analyze the other's affect. So to be able to know whether or not my parent or my caregiver is in a safe place and is going to respond to me with helpful nurturing and survival needs, like meeting my needs, if they're going to meet my needs, or if they're not going to be able to meet my needs and they're going to reject that I have needs because their needs come first. Because when we're going to die, we have to save ourselves first. Our body will not save our child first. It will save ourselves first.
Right. Right.
Right. So that puts the child in danger. Right. So when, from that perspective, so our child is designed to read us. They're designed to know whether or not we are inherently safe and capable of offering them what they need, of meeting their needs.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the child experiences a mother who is in danger, right? Then they are realizing, like, oh, I must not be safe either, obviously, right? And the other thing is that they won't listen to you as well because they don't see you as a safe leader.
Oh, that makes sense.
Right. So why don't our kids listen to us when we're so mad? Mm-hmm. Right. Cause that's it. We think to ourselves, cause I remember thinking this when my kids were little, can't you see how mad I am? Like, why are you not right? Like, don't you understand? But the thing is, the more dysregulated we are, the less safe the child feels. Therefore, the child is not seeing us as a safe leader. They're seeing us as a threat.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so their system is now in fight or flight. And so instead of listening to us, they're figuring out how to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They're figuring out how to eliminate the threat, to like run away or push us away, like get us out of there. So if they are reacting with like yelling too, they're trying to get us to leave them alone.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not safe. They're not safe. Everybody's not safe. We all are in the water without a lifeboat. And so parental regulation, like capacity to regulate yourself, to find that sense of internal safety, is actually the lifeboat.
That's the most important thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So once you've got that internal safety, now you're in the lifeboat and you can grab your kid and bring them in with you.
Mm-hmm.
And your kid will gladly go because they know that you're a safe adult.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're dysregulated, you're not a safe adult. And so they will not listen to you. They will not respond to you appropriately in a healthy way.
And if you don't know that, then that just pisses you off more.
Exactly.
Makes the situation worse.
Cycle.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. So yeah. Something else that I picked up on kind of just dissecting this mom's post, mm-hmm. Is she had mentioned energy level and not being able to jump in the shower some days, mm-hmm. you know, something that basic. Can you speak a little bit to why that is when we're in a, you know, in a state of depression or we're yeah. feeling kind of low and mm-hmm. why that affects your physical energy and what yeah, things, maybe things to do too.
Totally. Yeah. I'm really glad you brought it back to that because, one of the things as we're discussing, right, like the survival states, the fight or flight. So most of us know fight or flight
mm-hmm.
and some of us know the next one, which is freeze. Right. So we have multiple, there's a handful of survival actions, fight, flight, freeze. Ones that we don't really know as much about or that we haven't like commonly, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't get talked about as much is fawn.
Oh.
And then submit.
Okay.
So let's talk about fawn and submit just really quick. So fawning is like trying to make you like me. I'm going to try to please you so that you don't murder me, right? So like if a lion is attacking me, I'm going to try to like make the lion think I like it. I'm going to be like, "Oh, but you're so cute." Like, you know what I mean? Like I'm going to try to be nice, try to make it like me, try to make it not want to eat me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of your fawning. You're trying to align with the person who has the most power. You're trying to get that person to connect with you because that keeps you safe.
Kids do that.
Absolutely. Kids do that. Spouses do that.
Yeah.
Right. So, and we can, that's a whole nother episode, but okay. So then submit is the one I wanted to really get to because submit is giving up. So submit happens when all of our other resources have been exhausted. And nothing has helped. And so we're going to shut our body down. So when the lion does eat us, it's not going to hurt as badly because we're going to shut down our organs. We're going to shut down our pain receptors. We're going to disconnect. We're going to dissociate, right? So we're going to just separate ourselves from our body, from our existence. Like we're going to disengage because that's going to make the pain less bad.
Mm-hmm.
So often with depression, depression can be a form of submission. Depression can sort of have our body reacts to those within the depression cycle, our body can react with like a submit, a give up. Essentially, I don't really exist. So I don't really need to get up that much. I don't really need to take a shower. I don't really need to do all these things, because those are things that people do who are living. Those are things that people do who are surviving. Yikes. But I'm not going to make it. So I'm out. Like, I don't need to do all that stuff. Right? Because it's our nervous system's way of helping us feel less pain, like that shut all the way down stuff. Mm-hmm. And so that state is a really hard state to get out of. And it feels so strong, because it's what, from a polyvagal perspective, it's called a dorsal vagal shutdown. So a dorsal vagal shutdown is really the state of ourself that we go to before death. And our body's evolution, we weren't really designed to come back from that, right? Because we're submitting to be done. Mm-hmm. So we don't really have as much of a helpful adaptive way to get back from that. That's why it feels so hard. That's why it's so persistent. That's why it's so deep. And so I see that you're having thoughts go.
Because I'm feeling like that's where this mom is at. Real scary. Yeah. And, you know, for her especially, and she did mention in the post, you know, about the demons winning. And so it feels like she's in submit at this mm-hmm. point.
Yeah. And I think, so I want to talk about a couple of things, the demons. But first I want to talk about, like, if we're feeling that submit, that can be really, really ready to give up. And we can sort of get into the place of like self-harm or suicidality. And so I want all humans to know that we don't have to submit. We can get out of this. It is possible. There are resources out there. And if everybody doesn't already know that when we are feeling like we're in a mental health crisis, when we're feeling suicidal, we can call the phone number 988. And 988 is the suicide hotline. It's the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. So you just dial on your phone 988, just like you would like 911, just that simple. And there's going to be somebody that you can talk to. And they don't track your location. They don't track your name. Like, they only have what you give them. So if you don't tell them where you are, who you are, or whatever, they won't know it. So there's no reporting of the information. So like, you don't have to be afraid. You don't have to worry that it's going to come back or it's going to end up in your records or whatever, like nothing like that. It's just, so if you do need to talk to someone, then they're there for you. And then if they and you get to a place where you decide that you need additional help, they'll send someone to your home. They'll send you a team of people, of counselors, of social workers, of behavioral health technicians, whatever is required for your needs at that time. They'll send you somebody to help you at your home. And what they'll help you do is create safety in your home. And they'll help work with you to build resources, to identify the ways that you can help yourself, to create what's called a safety plan. And if you need to, then they'll take you to a place that can help you more. So they'll take you to get a higher level of care. If you need to go to the hospital for acute stabilization, meaning if you're in crisis and you're not safe to be alone, then you can go to the hospital and they can help you stay alive and get through this state so that you can come out on the other side and then keep working towards getting better.
That's good to know.
Yeah. So I want that to be, that needs to be out there, 988. And we can put some of this information too in the show notes as well.
Absolutely.
And so just kind of getting that out there as a resource, like there's always help available. The other thing about this mom who said, you know, these demons are going to win. So I want us to think about these states as they're trying to survive. They're trying to cope, right? They're survival states. They're trying to help in some way. And so a lot of us have this, maybe we have a voice that's mean. Maybe we have things that come up, constant memories, constant ruminating of like really negative experiences or things that people have said to us in the past. So sometimes our mind is like reminding us of that all the time.
Right.
Or sometimes we have a voice that's telling us that we should just be done. We should give up. We should, you know, the world would be better off without us. Like those voices and those flashbacks and those memories, those are happening because something inside you is saying, hey, we need help. I need help. I'm in pain. I have unhealed stuff from my childhood and I deserve to get that help. And so those reminders sometimes are offering, those are reaching out to help. So it's, think about it like our insides are reaching out for help.
Mm.
And so when what we feel as demons, because it's like, why would you do this? Stop doing this to me, right? Like, why is my mind doing this to me? Sometimes it's just that it just needs help. It's asking for help. And so we can offer that stuff help by saying, hey, I as a whole person can get better. I'm going to take a step to help myself. I'm going to use a grounding skill today. I'm going to offer myself some help today. And so we can understand that our mind is not trying to harm us, even when it feels that way. Because again, feelings are feelings, they're not facts. So the human is designed to survive. It's designed to grow. It's designed to connect. So whatever it's doing has a reason. We don't always know what that is. And so it can feel really daunting and hurtful and harmful. So what we can do is we can sort of give ourselves the space to know that our mind isn't trying to hurt us. It's not broken or bad. These aren't demons that are trying to take you down. There's not evil inside of you. It's something inside of you that was hurt and not, and hasn't been healed. And so it's not responding to the world as if the world was a safe place. So it's responding to the world as if it was a dangerous place. And so part of that strategy might be to keep us from going out, right? To keep us from leaving the house because the world's not safe. So it's trying to keep us back.
Right.
Right. So this stuff can get really, really deep and it's not trying to hurt you, even though you're experiencing pain. So let's invite all people to know that they're not broken. They're not in a battle, even if it feels that way. They deserve help and support and connection. And they are able to get that. And they, every single person, and the mom who posted this, you deserve help and support. And whatever you have gone through and all of the ways that you feel are valid and important and matter. And even if somebody else has told us that that's not true, they're objectively wrong. We are not good or bad people. We're all humans deserving of support and help. Because at any given time, when I'm healed and getting help, I can make decisions that are positive and healthy. So even if I've done bad things, or people have done bad things to me, that doesn't make me bad. That doesn't make me bad. It only sort of informs my internal belief system. Because we learn from what people say and do, right? So if we've been taught that, but that's not objectively true, that's just what my experience taught me. But the whole big world, we got to zoom out. No one, you are not bad. You don't have anything bad inside of you, just stuff that's confused and needs help.
And that makes so much sense now that you explain it like that. Sorry.
It's okay.
Crazy trying to get over it.
Yeah.
But you know, that with your brain sort of running that tape where it might feel like a demon is likely going to keep you from establishing healthy relationships, right? And so further isolation, further feeling like I'm not safe. So it just, that really opened my eyes right there big time. And I appreciate you explaining that because I feel like a lot of people out there feel like, well, I must be bad if, you know, my brain's telling me this, or if I keep thinking in, you know, these things. So I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah. And I'm really glad that this mom reached out and shared her experience, her story, her feelings, her state right now, because that she reached for help and she got help. Meaning we believe her, we support her, and she's not in this alone, and she can find healthy connections that are safe. And she can build an internal sense of safety no matter what has happened to her in the past, no matter how she feels right this very second. I guarantee that internal safety is achievable because that's how she is designed. People are designed to have, to grow and learn and change and adapt. And so we can help her.
I agree with that. And, you know, I love that you gave grace to those who maybe have done or said things in the past that aren't so wonderful. Because it's difficult to control yourself when you're in lizard brain, right?
Totally.
I had, again, big, long talk with my therapist about this yesterday, because I still get to the point, even with all the work that I've done, if I flip to lizard brain, it's hard for me to control things. Yeah. Like for instance, I have a family member who we just don't really see eye to eye. She's not even a real family member. She was kind of like adopted into our family kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And she and I are a bit at odds, for a variety of reasons. And I sort of caught her talking shit about me the other day. Mm. And yeah, and it wasn't good. And I flipped into, which I haven't done in a really long time, Laura, but I flipped into lizard brain and I like lost it on her. And things came out of my mouth that I had no control over. And yeah, it's a really, that is a, talk about scary. Like I was scared myself being in that space. Like I definitely wasn't safe there.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked away from the situation and kind of talked with Matt about it and came down a little bit about it and had a discussion with my therapist. She's like, okay, so you are really stressed out. And so that was digging up a lot of past stuff. And like, you were feeling pretty, you know, cornered. And she wasn't obviously saying, yeah, you should totally do that again. But she was helping me not feel like a complete failure. Right. All these years of all the work that I've done, I honestly felt like in that moment, we're just gone. We're just trash. Like, how could I get back to that moment where I was out of control?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, I hear that a lot actually. And I want to think about it differently. It's not going back, right? It's getting reminded of a time when you felt threatened or when you were legitimately threatened, and your brain starts operating on a memory instead of operating on the present reality.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you're not going back. You can't lose the work that you've done. It's in there, you know, so you're going to come right back to the present reality once you re-engage. So when we feel threatened, that's when our survival system kicks in. And that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so we survive by whatever we do, right? Fight, flight, fawn, we do all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and that totally would have been me back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
That I absolutely reacted like I hate, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I hate it. And it happened. But I appreciate that you gave grace to that because yeah, we make mistakes. I'm not saying like, I'm not proud of myself by any means, And I'm not saying like, yeah, she does that again, I'll do it again. No.
No.
But it's not beneficial, healthy, helpful for me to just beat myself up about it forever because that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we talked through about learning from this situation and, you know, next time putting some tools and some skills in place so that next time when we talk about the window of tolerance a lot, when I'm finding that that window of tolerance is getting to its end, that I do something different. Put my phone down is probably the best thing to do. You know, walk away, whatever it is, like whatever scenario I'm in, change that scenario, and be able to do so before nuclear happens. Because I mean, I hate to say it, but even me at 43 years old, having been through what I've been through, knowing what I know and having the mindset that I have, I freaking lost control, Laura.
Yeah, that's okay. We do that. Right? Everybody has a 1 in 10. We all lose control when we're under duress, like when we have things sort of picking at our window, right? Like, so we have to maintain our health and our capacity so that we have a bigger space to operate from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so we're all going to lose control at times. And that's okay. We can apologize, because it's every adult's responsibility to maintain their own window of tolerance. It's every adult's responsibility to control their own window of tolerance. And if you have kids, it's your responsibility to teach your kids about where they are, if they're safe, how they can know if they're feeling too much and then they need to take a break. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we can all do that by just learning one or two things about ourselves. How can I tell that I'm getting close to the edge?
Mm-hmm.
If I know that, then I can say, okay, when I feel that edge feeling, I'm going to stop. I'm going to count to 10 really slow or whatever. I'm going to tap my feet for 30 seconds. I'm going to look around and find 10 things in the room that are squares, whatever, right? I'm going to use something in the moment to get me back down.
Back to the moment. Yeah.
From the edge. That's all. Let's just start there. And when we are parents of kids, then, because the reason why kids misbehave isn't because they're just bad. They're little kids. Like, nobody likes to be mean or bad. They don't know what they're doing. They're out of control. They're out of their window.
Yeah. Right.
Right. So they're in fight or flight. So they're kind of just like, it's chaos. It's internal chaos. They don't have the regulation skills that we've built over time. Right. Like you said, you lost it. Every kid loses it, but they just lose it faster. Right. Because they don't have that tolerance. They haven't built up those skills to regulate themselves, to come back. Mm-hmm. And so when we see our kids starting to get frustrated or starting to get wiggly or starting to whatever, that's when we can go to our kids and say, hey, I see that, you know, I noticed that you're, you know, moving really fast. I wonder if you and me can walk around the living room 3 times before you finish doing what you're doing. We're just getting them back in their window. We're just getting them. So like we notice their edges and we help bring them back.
Mm-hmm.
So we're teaching them how to recognize and build their own internal sense of safety.
I love that. Love it. And I think that is so, so helpful. And even in my own life, like my kid, you know, well, and I hate to use this as a thing, because I feel like all kids have this, but he does have ADHD. So I keep that in mind. His emotions are, you know, extra sometimes. But he gets really emotional when it comes time to do homework. What kid doesn't, right? So I don't think it's his ADHD. I think it's just kid. And so we've started working on, like, he'll get to the point where he goes from 0 to a crying mess just because I say, hey, your math homework, you got to do your math homework. You know what I mean? And so we're working on him being able to identify, even as little as he is at 8 years old, to identify when he switches internally and starts going to, you know, getting whatever is getting his emotions up. Is he nervous? Is he scared? Is, you know, all of that stuff. And so trying to help him sort of identify that too, so that he can take a step back, take a breath, run around the island, do what he needs to do.
Right.
But we've been kind of working on that, and we're getting there, and he's having an easier time sort of regulating himself even at 8.
Yeah. So. Takes practice. And so for this mom, you know, who has posted this, there are things that we can do. So with the energy, it's sort of one of those chicken or eggs, right? So the best thing that we can do is give ourselves 30 seconds at a time of grounding skills. We start there. We give ourselves the opportunity to find our sense of present. And we look around, am I safe or am I dangerous? Right? Like, am I in danger or am I safe? We make that discernment. So we're giving ourselves 30 seconds a day of like reminding ourselves that we're not in danger. Mm-hmm. We start there. And the more often we can do that, the more our mind will be ready and able to operate and function and do our daily living activities, like taking a shower, like feeding our kids, like whatever.
Yep. I love it. So
start there.
So if this mom, or any mom really that's listening, or anybody, would like to connect with you, what's the best way to do that?
So you can find me online, www.benaviri.com. And you can find me on Facebook at Benaviri. You can you can text us from the website and just reach out. We can set up consultation with one of our therapists, and you can get your questions answered and see if you feel like you might want to start working together.
Awesome. I love it. And for those of you who don't know about Laura's office, and hopefully it's okay that I say this, she loves working with mamas and kiddos. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely a great place for, you know, adult mamas, but for kiddos as well. So check her out, talk to her. Thank you, Laura, for this talk today.
Thank you.
And thank you, those out there that are tuning in, that tune in with us every month for, well, this is now our 13th show. So it's been over a year. Super excited. Hop on over to our YouTube channel, guys. It's at Mom Nation USA, and just scroll down just a little bit and you will see the mental wealth playlist. If you want to catch any of the previous 12 episodes, we talked through a lot of stuff last year and oftentimes did pull an anonymous post from the group as well so that we could help a mama out. That particular mama, as well as our audience that I'm sure is dealing with similar things to those, you know, those specific posts. So catch us over there. If you are more of the audio version, maybe you run a lot, drive a lot, that kind of thing, and you prefer podcasts, you can do a quick search on your favorite podcast platform for Mom Nation Talk Radio. And you will not only get this show, but you will get all of our other shows. Just hit the little notification bell, subscribe, like, all that jazz. And we will see you next month. Thank you, Laura.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.